You are dialed into the Success Line podcast, the place where you get a chance to phone a friend, call in a lifeline, and ask a favor of someone who's been there and done that. This is real people getting one-on-one coaching with Success Entrepreneurship Editor and New York Times bestselling author, Rory Vaden. Here's Rory.
Hey, Achiever, welcome to the Success Line podcast. I'm your host, Rory Vaden, entrepreneurship editor at Success Magazine, and excited to bring to you a special episode today. This is a chance for you to meet me and get to know a little bit more about me, but also get to know a little bit about our fearless leader the whole Success team here, right? So this is an exciting time for me because I've got to meet Glenn Sanford several months ago at this point. And when he bought Success Enterprises and became the CEO of Success Enterprises, I was excited to jump on as part of the team and just really have been excited to work with him and get to know him and learn some of his philosophies and be invited here into the fold as one of the contributors and editors. And so this was a chance for me and Glenn to sit down and for you to get to know a little bit about him and to allow him, I guess, to get to play interviewer so you could get to know a little bit about me. So Glenn, welcome to our show.
Hey, Rory. No, it's great. It's fun doing this very first, you know, sort of intro podcast to kind of the new version of Success, which, you know, you've got actually a much longer history of doing things with Success, probably for the last 5, 6, 7 years, maybe longer. How long have you been involved with the Success brand at some level?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So Darren Hardy was a former publisher. It was a friend of mine, actually. He was one of my mentors early on. In fact, I tell a whole story about him in my second book, Procrastinate on Purpose. So that came out in 2015, which means I met him. That story happened in 2012 when we were on the tour for my first book. So I guess I've been a part of Success for at least 10 years, you know, just contributing with articles and quotes, but never in this kind of a capacity. So that was a new invitation just really from my relationship with you.
Well, awesome. And you know, and for those who are, you know, just getting to know you, you know, your first book, Take the Stairs, which is really about doing the things that are a little bit more difficult, but you know you should be doing. I suspect I have listened to a fair bit of the book, but maybe you could just talk a little bit about some of the books you've written and what your sort of philosophy on life and business is.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think for me, I've always been fascinated with the study of influence, right? And I was raised by a single mom, and you know, I was born we lived in a trailer when I was little, and we moved around a ton, and we didn't have a lot of money. And I realized early on that some people in the world had more influence. Not just money, income was part of it, but some people had more influence. They had the ability to create change in a community. They had the ability to be invited into conversations that would reshape the future. And certainly money also was a part of it. And so I was fascinated with Success. And, you know, over the course of my life, I guess that was a part of the catalyst for my journey. And my first book was called Take the Stairs, which really represented, I think, my premise or my hypothesis that after studying successful people for my entire career, I came to the belief that there is one thing that every successful person has in common, which is that successful people form the habit of doing things they know they should be doing, even when they don't feel like doing them. And so if I had to boil success down as an individual person, I would be able to say it in one word, which is discipline. Discipline. the discipline to do the things we know we should do when we don't feel like doing them, which is where the take the stairs metaphor came from. And that really discipline is the antidote to what I think is one of the most expensive invisible costs in business today, which is procrastination. We all struggle with procrastination. We know what we should do, but we can't get ourselves to do it. We know what I should do today, but yet I find a way to allow myself to get distracted. And so in that book, we talked about the different types of procrastination that exist, which we can dive into if you want. But it really was about, you know, before you can influence other people, you really should become a master of influencing yourself. And that was really where my journey started in terms of as a writer. Of course, that book was a number one Wall Street Journal bestseller, a number two New York Times. And that was a huge part of launching, I guess, my career into this space, although we had several other things going on and a huge team that my wife and I had built, you know, all the way even back in those days. But that was the genesis, I guess, of my public, I guess, presence as, you know, a thought leader or a student or a teacher.
Right. And now your role now with success, and obviously you still have a day job, we'll just say it, you know, you've got, you're running Brand Builders, but over here you're the editor on the entrepreneur theme or vertical. That's where you're going to be spending your time a fair bit, right?
Yeah.
And in that, I think what's really interesting is, you know, getting to know you, you've built at least one business to an exit. I don't know if there's more than one, but you've built at least one business to eight figures in terms of being able to grow that business. You've got another business that you're growing a similar trajectory. It seems like there's, you know, having a lot of really interest. In fact, that's how you and I met, was unrelated to Success Magazine. I was working with some people in the other company that I'm involved with, EXP, where they were saying, "Hey, Glenn, you need to write a book," and they paired me up with your organization, and then we had a little bit of a dialogue back and forth, and then I said, "Hey, by the way, it looks like we might be buying Success Magazine," and then you go, "Well, that builds your brand overnight."
Yes, that was a if there was an escalator to building a personal brand in terms of an audience, it's buying Success Magazine. And no, I mean that is exciting and something that's super exciting for your personal brand. But yeah, I am an entrepreneur. My mom sold Mary Kay cosmetics when I was young, and so I always tell people I grew up around women constantly teaching me about the principles of success. It also means I know more about makeup than I do about cars, because that was where I started. And then when I was in college, I worked in direct sales, and for 5 years I was in a network marketing company and became one of the all-time leading record holders in the history of that organization. And then left to pursue my dream as a speaker. And then a little while later was my wife and I started a company, and we started a company from scratch. There, we had a couple other partners in the very beginning. And then we had, you know, basically the equivalent of some investors, and we grew that company from scratch to an eight-figure business. And we exited that company in 2018, and that company really had kind of like several businesses inside of it. So if you look at all those businesses, we actually had started multiple different seven-figure companies and then one eight-figure business that were all kind of together. So technically it was all under the house of one company name, but they, you know, different divisions, if you will. And then when we exited that business, my wife and I started Brand Builders Group. So AJ is the CEO of Brand Builders Group. We are the co-founders. We don't have any investors in Brand Builders Group. And basically, her and I have worked together our entire life. So when we started that last company, we met through somebody that we both knew. And we started as business partners first and then started dating a year into it, and then got married a few years later. And now we've been married for over 10 years. And we just celebrated our 14th date-iversary this past weekend. But we've only worked together. And, you know, so a lot of our clients, both in the former company and then in Brand Builders Group, and Brand Builders Group today works exclusively with people who are personal brands. So they're authors, speakers, influencers, and executives for companies who are trying to build their personal brand. But most of our clients are entrepreneurs. They are, or intrapreneurs. So they are direct salespeople, or they're professional service providers, they're real estate agents, they're financial advisors, doctors, dentists, lawyers, anybody who is what we call a mission-driven messenger, who's looking to use their personal brand to drive awareness for what they do. But we love entrepreneurs. We are entrepreneurs. We've been around entrepreneurs. And I think when I was in college, that company I worked with, I went door to door for 5 years. So I was going door to door 14 hours a day, 6 days a week on straight commission, paying all my own expenses. And then after that, I worked in IT sales, doing corporate enterprise phone sales. And then in our last company, we did B2B and, you know, we were calling on office parks and office buildings. And then in Brand Builders Group is basically entirely digital marketing. And so marketing and sales and business development has been our life, both doing it ourselves and teaching other people to do it. And we love it. And we love all aspects of it. The cold calling, door to door phone, you know, like cold part, we've done that. And then, you know, all the way to referrals and affiliates, and then digital marketing and paid traffic acquisition and organic and podcast. So we love all of it, but we are passionate about helping mission-driven messengers reach more people, which are, another word for that would be achievers. It'd be the people who are listening, the people who are part of the success platform. And of course, we're just excited to help the achievers. And obviously, if you haven't yet, by the way, if you're listening, if you haven't been over into the Success Achievers community, this is the place where it's free. You could come and join. This is how would you describe Achievers, Glenn? How would you describe that network?
Yeah, it's a positive entrepreneurs community that, because of the way it's set up, it's like a social network, but with all the politics and other distracting commentary that comes with an entirely open network. So we have people self-select in, and then we're actively cultivating the community so that we're all around people who are achieving and by extension want to help you achieve as individual entrepreneurs. So, you know, if you cultivate the right type of people, you know, everybody wants to help everybody else, which is really cool when you think about entrepreneurship. And it's ultimately a for-profit venture. So, you know, it's designed to be able to bring lots of really positive people together. And then we're playing with some ideas right now. Achievers All Access is kind of the name we're playing out with right now, which is where, you know, members can, you know, have through a small monthly subscription, it's probably gonna be around $50 a month. They'll get, you know, access to me, you, all the other editors, people on staff, coaching, just to be there for them for just general, just support, lots of exclusive content and,
courses and education. But it's kind of like, it's basically Facebook for achievers, right? It's like a social network of just personal development and leadership development. And I've had a blast being in there. And of course, you don't know, the networking and the meeting people is all part of the free experience. You're just sharing content. But I mean, I'm meeting people from across the world, all different professions, but you have this kind of common ground of we're here to achieve, we're here to get better, we're here to make ourselves better, we're here to help other people get better. I mean, it's powerful, and thousands of people already joining into the community.
Yeah, without a lot of promotion, the community is just under 3,000 people since December, and that's mm-hmm. We started with an LVP, least viable product, Yeah. and so as opposed to minimal viable product. So we started even below minimal viable product, went to minimal viable product. And now we've actually got the name, we got the URL, we got some strategy, and now it's all sort of coming together. And, you know, it, from the point that we sort of put it into play, I think in the next month or so, it's going to really take shape and become a valuable asset. But, you know, to your point, And I think to some extent, you know, achievers are some of the most positive people you can be around. I mean, mm-hmm. You're an achiever, I'm an achiever. And they always see, they're definitely glass half full type of people. Like you got some people who see a glass as half empty. Sure. You see other people who see glasses half full. I mean, there could be like two drops of water in a cup around an entrepreneur, and they're seeing water all over the place. like that's, and you can get around as many people like that, that you just can't help but have a great day and achieve more. And so that's really what we want to do, is pull all these people in and be part of this community. So question I was thinking about earlier when you were talking about, you know, sales, marketing, door to door, all the market. So this is the age old question, but I want to pose it to you.
All right.
If you only could specialize in one, what would it be? Sales or marketing?
If I had to choose one?
Right.
No one's ever asked me that question before. I mean, I think if I had to choose one for my survival, it would be sales. Because to me, sales is the shortest path. It's the shortest path to cash. And when you're in the entrepreneur world, when you're bootstrapping, I mean, I know you've done this because you've been so successful starting businesses from scratch, but you know, before you, the hardest part is when you don't have any money. Like the more money you have, like the more you can do things. The hardest part is when you have that dream and you go, how do I get money? And if you don't have investors and you don't have a bunch of savings and you don't have, you know, a retirement plan that you can cash in on, and you go, if you're bootstrapping something, there's only one way to really finance the growth of the business, which is customer finance companies. And we have always done that. We have generated the growth of the business from the revenue that the business generates. It's not the fastest way necessarily to grow, but it's the safest way. And I love sales because if you're selling something, you have immediate feedback that it's working. When you do, you know, now we're investors in different things. And, you know, when you look at investing, there's a lot of companies you can invest into that will spend millions and millions of dollars before they ever actually make a sale to somebody, before they ever actually collect revenue. And, you know, there's places where that makes sense in certain industries and, you know, business models where that's really common. But for the small business owner, it's like, before you just go out and invest $1 million into something, it's super valuable to go, can I get one person to give me $1 for one thing? And that's a huge win. And so I love marketing. I would say this, I love marketing more than I love selling. Selling is hard, or it doesn't have to be, but I will say this, door to door was so hard. I cried every day. I mean, I was 18 years old knocking on doors in Montgomery, Alabama, just getting door after door after door slammed on my face. And I did not enjoy that. But the truth is that the shortest distance to make a sale, it's all about trust. And I think as much as I believe in podcasting and social media and digital marketing, those are amazing avenues to automate trust and to scale trust, but they take time because people see very, very small snippets and they don't see every post and you don't have their full attention. But if I knock on your door and I can convince you to talk to me for 30 minutes, you know, or 40 minutes, we can go from stranger to you giving me money within 30, 40 minutes. Marketing is a more scalable effort, but it is a slower build and it's important for the long term. To me, sales solves every short-term problem. And if push comes to shove, the people who can go out and generate a sale are the ones who will survive. So if I had to, for survival, I would choose sales. But if I got to pick which one, because I enjoy it more, it would be marketing for sure.
Oh, for sure. So, we got young Rory, 18 years old. You're walking, you know, from door to door, and, yep, and you're getting some positive feedback from what, one out of every 10 doors that you knock on, something like
less,
that?
Way less. Like one or two customers a day, which would be like 60 or 70 doors, would have been a good day.
Okay. And so, so I'm curious, what were you selling door to door? By the way, I sold Kirby vacuum cleaners door to door. I'm just throwing it out there.
Love it. I mean, so many. I mean, Zig Ziglar was my personal mentor, right? Zig went door to door. Lots of people.
He was doing pots and pans, right? He was
pots and pans. Guy. That's right. So it's, I want to say that Mark Cuban went door to door. There's a number of very wealthy and successful people who have spent time going door to door. But, so I was selling, basically like educational materials, books and stuff like that.
Okay. Okay. Awesome. Now it's one of those things that if you have never done door to door sales and you're really wanting to cut your teeth on sales, of course, right now we got COVID sort of hopefully waning down, but yeah, as soon as it's safe to go knock on people's doors again, talk about knocking out all of the things that you need to learn about sales. You will learn about knocking on doors, and nobody can take it away from you. I'm an introvert. I still knocked on doors, and it was one of the most painful things that I could possibly do. But I knew if I could do that, I could do anything in sales.
Yeah, and I think that's so true. I mean, I think that the gift of today is that you don't have to, right? The gift of today is that because the tools of digital marketing and content distribution are so readily available that this is more of what we do at Brand Builders Group. It's funny. So our first company did sales training. So the company that we exited focused on sales training. Brand Builders Group focuses almost exclusively on marketing. And so it is going, how can I put out content in a way that people can get to know me? Because here's, either way, a sale is based upon trust, right? And one of the ways, there's a couple different ways that people trust you. Like, first of all, we trust people that we see, right? So the good part about door-to-door is you see me face-to-face. So you can assess how much you trust me because I'm right here in front of you. It's real life. That's harder about phone sales as they can't see you, right? And so that's even a bigger barrier to overcome. It's easier to hang up on you than it is to slam the door on somebody, right? But if I see you, I trust you. And things like social media and YouTube, they give us the ability for people to see us, even though we're not seeing them, so to speak, they are seeing us. The other thing that helps me build trust is if I learn from you, right? If you teach me something, then that helps me build trust. And of course, if I'm with you, whether you're seeing me speak on stage, which is a huge part of my life these days, is speaking on events or on webinars or virtual trainings, you're learning from me. And so even though we've never met, it feels like you know me. Well, you can do the same thing for your prospects. As if they're watching a little, you know, a 60-second clip of you on social or a 4-minute IGTV or a 9-minute YouTube video, or they're listening to a 12-minute or 20-minute podcast, if you're educating them, or you're encouraging them, they're going to feel like they know you, even if they haven't met you. So if I see you, I feel like I trust you. If I learn from you, I feel like I trust you. And then the other thing about trust, which I only realized recently, is that we trust people that we know intimate things about. Like, you know, the person that you would most trust in your life probably knows the most intimate details about you. They know how often you brush your teeth and what kind of toothpaste you use and what kind of clothes you wear and what time you get up and what you would order at Chick-fil-A and, you know, like what, everything. They know all of these details. And when I first started on social media, and even some till this day, I have somewhat of a distaste for this, the insignificant or the trivial sharing of like, look at what I'm eating or look at what I'm wearing. And as a user, I've always felt, well, what value does this add to my life? But what I realized is, let me walk you through this. Okay, Glenn. So let me ask you, Glenn, who would you totally fangirl on if they walked into the room right now? Like, who is someone that's either a movie star or a business tycoon or an athlete, like somebody that you would kind of consider like a celebrity, that if you said, whoa, if I could have lunch with this person, you know, or if this person walked in right now, I would just be so excited. Like, who comes to mind for you?
I'm going to go with Dwayne Johnson.
Okay. Great one. Yeah. So The Rock, right? I mean, if The Rock came in, right. And so like with The Rock, if somebody offered you a chance and they said, okay, look, so here's the deal, Glenn, I'm going to let you come travel for an entire day with The Rock. You get to sit next to him in the car. You get to go to every meeting. You get to listen to every phone call, but you cannot say a word to him. But you get to be there right when he wakes up, and you get to stay with him until the minute he goes to sleep. You can't talk to him, but you get to like follow him or shadow him. Would you be pretty excited about that? Like, would you do it? Would you think that was cool?
Yeah. Well, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
For sure. Yes, of course. Right. And because it's kind of like, I wonder what The Rock eats for breakfast. I wonder who The Rock talks to on a day. Like, does he text with like Oprah and Obama and like who does he text with? Like, what kind of meetings is he taking? How long does he work out? And what I realized is, even the most mundane but intimate details about people are fascinating to us. They make us feel like we know them. They're interesting. And that is part of the power, is that social media also gives people a chance to know you. What books do you read? Where do you eat? What do you do with your kids? So one of the things that we teach people at Brand Builders will say, you know, your feed is what you do. Your stories are who you are. So when I come to your feed, I should see, like, basically it's the three E's. Either you should be educating me, encouraging me, or entertaining me. That is, if you're using social media specifically as a marketing avenue to grow your business, when I hit your feed, you have to assume I'm a stranger. And you should either be educating me, you should be encouraging me, or you should be entertaining me with something funny or heartwarming or whatever. But then in your stories, that is where I get to know who you are. So your feed is what you do. Your stories are who you are. Stories don't have to be polished. They don't have to be touched up photos. They don't have to be, you know, highly dense in terms of the information. That is where people go if they want to know more about you. But you're not going to grow your followers if that stuff's all over your feed, because when new people come, it's like, no offense, they don't care about my kids. They don't care about what I'm eating for lunch. What draws them in is, what do I have of value? What is my expertise around? And if you're a realtor, or you're a dentist, or you're a lawyer, or you're a financial advisor, or you're an entrepreneur, you have something to teach people. It is whatever you have spent your life learning about. One of the things we say again a lot at Brand Builders is, you're most powerfully positioned to serve the person you once were. You're most powerfully positioned to serve the person you once were. So you can teach all of the things that you have learned. And it's related to your expertise, right? If I'm a real estate agent, I want to share things that are like, what's going on in the neighborhood? How much are things selling for? What are the interest rates these days? Like, what would be useful to someone who doesn't know you? And then inside of the stories, if you want more, that's where you can learn about me and, you know, what I look like when I wake up first thing in the morning and what I do on the weekends. And I think that, but all of it, tying this back to your question, ultimately is about trust. It still comes down to the human connection. It is about trust, and trust can be developed by knocking on a door, or trust can be developed through a podcast or a tweet, or trust can be developed on a phone. But it's just different mediums, different vehicles, but we're all still human, and we're all still looking to do business with people that we trust.
Oh, awesome. No, great stuff. So now, obviously we live in a digital world, and all businesses should at some level be either technology businesses, social media businesses, et cetera. When it comes to companies that are less digital, like what's your thoughts around, you know, the local plumber or people who are like in this sort of heavy service, you know, type of business? Maybe realtors a little bit more gregarious, but you've got people who are like manufacturing widgets and maybe they're working B2B. What are your thoughts around on those types of businesses?
Well, I think if you buy into the trust conversation, right? And you say if you buy into that and you go, okay, all things being equal, I'm going to buy from the person that I trust more. Right? Okay, so whether it doesn't matter what that is. If you're selling me plain or you're selling me a widget, all things being equal, I'm probably going to buy from the person that I trust more. So, you know, if you're a manufacturing company, it's not that social media is going to be the fastest way to grow your business. I may not say that. But what I would say is, all things being equal, if you could be the person who manufactures my widget, or this other company who has a beautiful website that is easy to find, all of their pages are highly optimized. You know, they're highly optimized to show up in search engines. They have social media where I can click and see them celebrating their employee of the month and celebrating their customers, and they're showing me what their offices look like and they're showing me their culture, and I have a view into their world of who they are, what they believe, how they treat their customers, and they literally just appear more modern and innovative by the very fact that they have a social media presence or a YouTube channel or a podcast or at least a website with a mobile user experience that isn't crazy. Or I can go to the site, you know, the guy who has one web page up that looks like it was put up there in 1985 and hasn't been updated since. And it's like, who are you going to do business with? I mean, I don't know. You tell me, right? That's where I go. I don't pretend to have like all the answers, but if you just look at human behavior and you ask yourself the question, here's another thing that I think is huge for everybody is reviews. Right? When you go on Amazon, just ask yourself the question, when you go on Amazon and you're looking for new toothpaste, are you more likely to buy the toothpaste that has 6 reviews or the one that has 32,469 reviews? I mean, what do you think? Like, and so showing your customers, right? And letting your customers be on your site, and if you can, on video, if you can get your customers to say, here's the experience I had working with this company. I mean, this is where almost all of our business comes from these days, is like our customers do all of our selling for us because people go, wow, look at all of these people saying this experience was so wonderful. If all of these people not only are writing it or putting a star, but actually putting their face on camera saying, I enjoyed working with these people, it's extremely compelling. So it's one of those things where I never go so far as to say, well, you know, social media is the key, or webinars are the key, or podcasting is the key, or a website is the key. I think trust is the key in sales and marketing. And I also think reach is the key. We have a thing that we call the reputation formula, which says that results times reach equals reputation. So reach counts for a lot. If I don't know about you, I cannot buy from you. And so again, if you know, you come back to the technology question, well, the person who gets 1,000 visitors a month is likely to have more resources and grow faster than the person with no website. The person with, you know, 10,000 social media followers is likely to have more customers than the person with 10, just because you're reaching more people. And I think there are a lot of industries who, I mean, reputation is an interesting concept, Glenn, because I think like when people say, oh, you know, okay, Brand Builders Group, you guys do personal brand strategy. What is personal branding? People think of that as like a new concept, which it kind of is. Like, it's a pretty new term. But we often tell people that personal branding is simply the digitization of reputation. It's really reputation. Reputation is as old as time. We all understand, not all of us understand personal branding somehow, but we all understand reputation is, what do people say about you? Who do people say you are? Are you trustworthy? Can I believe in what you're saying? That is reputation. The power of to quote unquote personal branding or technology or social media. All of those are just terms that represent the digitization of reputation. If I can read your reviews, if I can see your customers, if I can see your client list, if I can, you know, watch your stories, look at your social media feed, read your website, I have view into who you are. And that helps me trust you, which I think accelerates the likelihood that I will do business with you. And so I'll say, at least for us, we're trying to build our online presence. We're trying to pump content out into the universe as fast as we can. We're trying to produce as much value. And that's what we're doing here at Success, right? I mean, that's why I'm here. That's why you brought me here, is to go, you recognized, I presume, to say, we have to produce as much valuable content rich, like, information and pump it out into the universe as fast as possible so that people will subscribe to the magazine and buy our courses and do the various other things, book our speakers and, you know, engage in our coaching programs and all the various other things that are come from Success. But it starts by just pumping out content to build trust. I mean, would you agree with that?
I would. That was really good stuff. And I suspected that might be your answer. Given that, you know, we're going to be reaching a large audience in different areas, some people are going to be focused more digitally, and some are going to be focused more on how do they work on their business that's a little bit more physically based and sort of trying to, you know, bring it together in such a way that, you know, you as a successful entrepreneur, myself and so many others, I mean, our real role here is to help people succeed, and that, you know, and to be achievers. Amen. And to some extent, posit the questions that they might have as up and coming entrepreneurs. If you're, you know, I think we all now know, because of, you know, how, you know, Amazon works, how Netflix works, how, you know, now you've got so many, you know, retailers who have basically moved onto the cloud, and by embracing a fully, you know, cloud-based strategy and marketing strategy, they're doing more business than they did when they were physically based. Some of it was forced because of what's happened in the last, 12, 14, 15 months. But what I'm hearing is the people that actually did embrace the new economy, you know, for the most part, we're able to figure out ways to actually thrive better than they were, you know, if they were just simply trying to figure out how do I pay my employees? How do I just stay in business? How do I hope people come to my store when people aren't really traveling? But if they went a different way and thinking about how do I pivot in a way that actually reaches my customers so that, you know, I can scale my business in a point in time when things feel difficult.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of advantages, I mean, financially speaking, to the digital world, just the overhead and things like that. And I like what you said about marrying the two, Glenn, because I would agree with that too. I would say it's not about marketing or sales. It's about both.
Right.
Right. I mean, the real, and we live in a world where they're both available. Now, I would say, I think the pendulum used to be heavy on sales, right? It was just like all sales, and then it swung, and now it's been so heavy on marketing. I think sales is a lost art. I think people struggle with, how do I have a conversation and ask for a referral? What words do I say to collect a credit card or a listing agreement or a, like, and so I love that, because I'm actually more from the old school probably than from the new school in that regard, because I think it is both. And I think marketing is fun and, always changing, and there's new ways of tracking and just incredible intelligence that you can have with marketing that we never used to be able to have, even a couple decades ago. But sales is people. It is human behavior and psychology, and it's understanding. And ultimately, if sales is done right, it's about helping somebody get what they want, somebody else get what they want. And it's a loss. I think that's more of a lost art that needs to come back.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think there's the two schools of thought. One, and I'll go back to the 18-year-old Rory, and I'll go back to the 18-year-old Glenn. I mean, when we first started learning sales, we probably actually didn't even know how to use the techniques we were using. We were given like this script book, right? And we're like, okay, if the prospect says this, then you say this, and then
right.
You have to build up this many items of value before you're allowed to ask for the sale, and then you never allowed the customer to answer a question that's a yes or a no. It can only be something that leads to the next question. So, and then it's alternative choice. Would you like to get together at 2 o'clock or 4 o'clock, or so there was all these sort of things that we would learn, and we probably failed miserably at it back in the day, because we were using like the wrong tool, the wrong question for the situation. But we had to go through this sort of learning exercise to learn the questions and how they work. And then we got into situations where we actually, and hopefully we had good products and services back then, but then you finally sort of internalize this, then you find a product or service, then you go, man, now I know exactly why these work and why it's so important for me to know these questions, because it's our job to help people get, do what they want us to help them do. So if we show up and we're selling educational courses, well, they're talking to us because they must internally have some interest in that. And so it's our job to then build the value and help them understand how this is going to solve a need. In real estate, we're working with buyers and sellers, and it's like we want to help a buyer actually get into a home. Right now, a typical home now is getting 10, 15, 20 offers on the home. And the sellers are sitting there going, which one do I take? And if we as agents don't figure out ways to position our buyers, help them understand the situation they're in, give them some tools, and then help them sort of overcome even the seller's objection, and then have the conversations with the listing agent, and then position. I mean, sales is so important, but if you don't have the skills to begin with, it's hard to know how to use them in a way that's constructive. So anyway, I digress a bit, but we've been spending, I think we've probably been chatting now for probably 40 minutes or so, I suspect, and just having a great conversation. But one thing, so you're married, you're in Nashville, is that
yeah,
is that, okay, what's the family dynamics? You got kids,
Yep. So I have, we have a little man who's about to turn 4, is our oldest, and his name's Jasper. And then we have, our youngest is Liam. And so he is like a year, he's like 21 months. So he's kind of basically a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, at least at the time of this recording. And so, this is the other thing. And I tell you, like, for those of you, I'll single them out here and say, those of you women who are doing the mom thing and the working thing, I mean, whew, hats off to you. I mean, this is a hard gig. And I mean, AJ is our CEO. She does CEO stuff. She runs the business. She deals with the strategy, the administration, the finances, the hiring and the firing and the teams. And I mean, she is our CEO, and she is also running the house and trying to keep track of 2 kiddos. And it's not easy. It is a challenging season to have a startup and 2 young kids, because even though we've done this before, so to speak, in terms of being entrepreneurs and starting, several companies or divisions, at least from scratch, It's not easy. I mean, it's just, it's, there's, I don't think there's no such thing as an easy startup. And I don't think there's any such thing as an easy season of raising toddlers. So we're living in that world and also loving it, loving the excitement and the challenge of, the tension between wanting to do a meaningful work, wanting to provide for our clients and opportunities for our team members, and also be good parents and just get to be there and be around for the kids. And I think, gosh, that's the story of every achiever, right? I mean, every achiever out there is trying to manage that tension. And I think it's an important one. And I think, again, the pendulum has swung for a lot of years towards hard work and work all the time and work till you can't, you know, breathe, like, and just all that matters is work and money. And I think there's been a very healthy movement back in the other direction. And hey, my TED talk was called How to Multiply Time. And this, you know, ended up being a viral TED talk, which really that TED talk, Len, was meant to solve that. I wasn't trying to solve the world's problems. I was trying to find some answers to solve my own problems. I mean, it's how you use your time, I think, is going to be a big part of the Success Line podcast. And I presume a lot of the people we bring on this show, which I'm so excited about, to be doing this with you all, is bringing actual real life achievers who are moms and dads and single people and young people and empty nesters, but bringing you, the listener, onto the show to ask your real life questions of your real life challenges of what you're actually struggling with, and to talk it through with you and go, you know, how do we manage the time? How do we create the technique? How we manage it emotionally? And how do we build processes and people to help you make more impact and just grow your influence and, you know, overall achieve your goals, which I think is what success is all about. So I'm just honored to be here, and thank you, Glenn, for extending the invitation to become the entrepreneurship editor, and excited to help you kind of grow your network and your platform and your impact. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thanks, Rory, for bringing me on your first podcast and being your probably one interviewer in your own podcast. So thanks for that. And thanks for being part of the team. I'm so, you know, as I've gotten to know you, I just love your energy, your positivity. And I can tell you have a very structured way of working with the world and just trying to create all those, you know, healthy boundaries around work, life, and all the other things. So thanks again for that. And thanks again for doing this podcast with me.
Well, there you go, Achiever. That is a wrap for our first official episode, a special episode with none other than the CEO of Success Enterprises, Glenn Sanford. You'll probably hear from him as well as some of the other editors from the Success team in the different categories along the way. But most of these episodes are not going to be about me. They're not going to be about Glenn. They're going to be about you, and you have a chance to come on the show as a guest to get live coaching and to allow me to work through things with you. Or if you're a little bit timid about coming on the show, you can still submit your questions. So if you go to success.com/success line guest, that it will take you to where you can drop in a question for myself and or apply to actually come on the show and work with me one-on-one. That's success.com/success line guest. I'm so excited and honored to be here with you. So keep tuning in, and here's to your success.